This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 in Brainerd, and on the web at KAXE.org. News is next.
United States. The Associated Press called the election for Trump early this morning after he clinched victory in the swing state of Wisconsin. Trump had already claimed victory at his watch party in Florida. He told supporters early this morning he survived this summer's assassination attempt for a reason.
We're going to make our country better than it ever has been. And I said that many people have told me that God spared my life for a reason. And that reason was to save our country and to restore America to greatness. And now we are going to fulfill that mission together. We're going to fulfill that mission.
Vice President Harris did not speak to a crowd of her supporters in Washington, D.C. last night. They had gathered at her alma mater, Howard University. Republicans will take control of the U.S. Senate next year. They flipped Senate seats in two states, Ohio and Montana, and they seized an open seat in West Virginia. In Ohio, Republican challenger Bernie Moreno defeated Democratic incumbent Senator Sherrod Brown. Ohio Public Radio's Sarah Donaldson has more.
Heading into Tuesday, the race looked to be one of the tightest and costliest in the country. Brown, who broke fundraising records with more than $84 million in contributions this cycle, had long said it would be his toughest re-election bid yet. Moreno took the stage just after 11, characterizing the night's national GOP wins as a, quote, new wave.
You know, we talked about wanting a red wave. I think what we have tonight is a red, white, and blue wave in this country.
On policy, he said he doesn't plan to diverge from former President Donald Trump's priorities. He's called for an overhaul of federal EV rules, elimination of the U.S. Department of Education, and federal protections of qualified immunity for police officers. For NPR News, I'm Sarah Donaldson in Westlake, Ohio.
Voters in 10 states weighed in on abortion rights amendments. NPR's Alyssa Nadworny reports voters in 7 of the states approved the ballot questions, while 3 rejected them.
5 states voted to cement existing abortion protections already outlined in state law. But in Missouri and Arizona, the results mean a dramatic expansion of abortion access. Voters in those 2 states approved amendments guaranteeing abortion access up to the point of fetal viability, generally around 24 weeks of pregnancy. Current Missouri law bans all abortions, even in cases of rape, and only with an exception for medical emergencies. In Arizona, the state currently has a 15-week ban. The measure in Florida failed to reach the 60% approval required for passage, meaning the state's 6-week abortion ban will stay in place. Measures to expand access also failed in South Dakota and Nebraska. Alyssa Nadworny, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News. Voters in Massachusetts have rejected an effort to legalize the regulated use of natural psychedelics, also known as magic mushrooms. Their use is currently legal in 2 states. As NPR's Tovia Smith reports, the ballot measure in Massachusetts would have decriminalized personal use.
If passed, any Massachusetts adult could have gone to a state-licensed facility to use psilocybin to treat depression and PTSD, for example, or for non-medical reasons. Residents could have also grown and used the psychedelics at home. 28-year-old Julia Mezzapredi voted against it because she says she has friends who've battled addiction.
They've started with pot, tried psychedelics, and have gone to harder things. So, you know, if you want to control it, that I'm okay with. But having access to do things outside of a controlled environment is where I draw the line, I think.
Similar concerns have been raised in Oregon, where regulated psilocybin centers were legalized in 2020. Yesterday, many cities and counties there voted to continue banning them from their communities. Tovia Smith, NPR News.
Forecasters say Hurricane Rafael is getting stronger as it's heading into the Gulf of Mexico. Rafael's top sustained winds are at 100 miles per hour. It's headed for western Cuba. Forecasters say it could soon become a major hurricane in the Gulf. They warn it could pour heavy rain on Florida and the southeastern U.S. this week. Repeating our top story, Donald Trump has been elected as the next president of the United States of America. The Associated Press says he has at least 277 electoral college votes. 270 are needed to win. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Insperity, providing HR services and technology.
From payroll, benefits, and HR compliance to talent development. Learn more at Insperity.com/HR Matters. And the Doris Duke Foundation.
Good morning. It is 7:06. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show with National Public Radio's Morning Edition and local coverage of the elections. We'll be hearing from our news director, Chelsea Perkins, coming up about 7:20. I'm Heidi Holton with Andrew Dezingle.
And looking at some Bemidji City results in the mayoral race, George Prince, the incumbent, won. City Council Ward 1, Gwenia Fiskold-Gould, the incumbent, won Ward 1. And City Council Ward 3, Mark Dickinson was the winner. And City Council Ward 5, Lynn Eaton, the incumbent, was the winner.
We would like to thank Grand Rapids State Bank for their support. They're proudly serving the Grand Rapids area for 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender. And thanks also to Minnesota Power. They're an elite company building a carbon-free future while delivering safe, reliable power. mnpower.com/energyforward.
And looking at weather for the today, we've got area fogs going on early this morning. Partly sunny with highs 46 to 49 degrees, west winds 5 miles per hour. Cloudy tonight with lows 28 to 32 degrees. And tomorrow, partly sunny, highs in the mid to upper 40s, breezy west winds 5 to 25.
Neither one of them are really honest, but Trump is less honest than Kamala.
I just know how it was when he was in office. Financially, I was much better.
All Kamala. There's not one percentage of Trump in there.
Our life was better under Trump.
Obviously, I don't want to vote for Trump. It's kind of tough with the next best choice being Kamala.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inske.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Donald Trump is returning to the White House. Republicans will control the Senate. We don't yet know who will control the House of Representatives. NPR congressional correspondent Deirdre Walsh and political correspondent Susan Davis are here with us now to tell us more. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
So let me start with you. A Republican Senate is a big deal for Trump's ability to govern and shape his agenda. Say more about how.
It's a big deal at this hour. He's guaranteed at least a 52-seat Senate majority that could climb to 54 or 55 seats, depending on how a remaining five races are called. The bigger the majority, the easier it is for Donald Trump to get his agenda through the Senate. In the short term, I think that the 2017 Trump tax cuts were a big question in this agenda, are in a very good position to be extended with Republicans in control. And also with that kind of a majority, a Trump cabinet nominees are likely to sail through the Senate. Any dissent will probably be minimal because I think the thing to keep in mind about Republicans in Congress today, they are much more unified behind Donald Trump, and there's much fewer voices of dissent that would object to his agenda.
And who is likely to lead this new Senate majority? Deirdre, do we know? I know that Mitch McConnell, the long-serving senator from Kentucky, had already announced that he would step down as leader of the Republicans, no matter who was in charge of that chamber. Do we have any sense of who will succeed him?
We don't know yet, but we will know a week from today. Senate Republicans are going to have a closed-door secret ballot election for their new majority leader. There are three declared candidates, John Thune of South Dakota, John Cornyn of Texas, and Rick Scott of Florida. This is really actually seen as a race between Thune and Cornyn. Both, right when the Senate was called, put out statements touting, to Sue's point, their relationships with Trump and their commitment to passing his agenda. He could weigh in on the race. It's unclear what effect that would have. But to Sue's point, I mean, this is going to be a very unified Senate Republican conference, and they're going to hit the ground running.
Do we have any sense of, is there any daylight between any of them and Donald Trump's agenda? I mean, Mitch McConnell is deeply conservative. He is the person who laid the groundwork for Trump's ability to control the federal judiciary, or at least to influence the federal judiciary to the degree that he had by holding open those vacancies, by refusing to move forward, you know, first, you know, Merrick Garland, when he was nominated by President Obama, he is the person who kind of laid the groundwork for this. But he did have some differences with Trump, particularly on Ukraine, for example, or in the NATO alliances. Do these candidates have any of those differences in their records so far?
I mean, I think in their past voting records, they did differ with Trump on the issue of Ukraine. But I think going forward, it's pretty clear that's going to be a much different issue for the Republican conference. I do think one thing there'll be some friction on between Trump and Senate Republicans is he could call for eliminating the filibuster. You know, the top Senate Republican leaders have resisted those calls, but they could still come and that could cause some friction. But to Sue's point about the size of their majority, they will have enough votes to get major things done, things like their tax bill.
One of the things that we've talked about this morning, Sue, is that one thing that stands out is just how few mixed Senate delegations are left. By that, we mean that there was both a Democrat and a Republican in the same delegation. What do you think that means?
Americans don't split their tickets anymore, not in federal races. They still will often do it for governors. There's still a different way people view state politics than federal politics. But a fascinating stat going into election last night, Michelle, is that in 68 of the 69 Senate races in 2016 and 2020 went the exact same way as the presidential at the top of the ticket. Mm. The way that these races, they haven't all been called, are on track, it looks like all Senate races will fall in line with the top of the ticket, maybe an exception in Wisconsin. It's huge. We're a hyper-polarized country. We've said it consistently over time, but the red has gotten redder, the blue has gotten bluer, and I believe there may be only two states in the entire country that have senators from opposing parties representing them. There's Maine and Wisconsin, but Wisconsin could change depending on the outcome of Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin's race.
And of course, we're focusing on the Senate because the House has not yet been called, so they still have a number of races outstanding. So, Deirdre, with that being said, do you have a sense of what kinds of things the next Congress will focus on?
Well, House Speaker Mike Johnson has basically pledged to move Trump's agenda if they keep their narrow majority. It's possible that they will be able to do that. We're still waiting on that. He's talking about a border security vote right at the top, renewing Trump's tax cuts right away. And he's talking about taking a blowtorch to the regulatory state, undoing a lot of the Biden-Harris regulations.
That is Susan Davis and Deirdre Walsh. Thank you both.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Voting went pretty smoothly across the country on Election Day, even though it was a high turnout election, and even though the FBI determined that there were hoax bomb threats to polling locations across several swing states, and these threats appear to have originated from Russian email domains. So we called back Chris Krebs. He's the former head of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency under the Trump administration. He was famously fired by Trump after he vouched for the integrity of the 2020 election that Trump lost. He now sits on the agency's Cyber Safety Review Board. Welcome back.
Hey, Steve. Morning. Good to be back.
How would you rate this election?
Well, like I said, in 2020, it was just another Tuesday on the internet. We didn't see any real cyber activity directed against the U.S. election infrastructure. So it was, by all accounts, a safe and secure election, I think just like it was in 2020.
What did you make, though, of these bomb threats?
Yeah, that, I think, was the notable activity yesterday. As you mentioned in the intro, there were dozens of bomb threats that came into several key swing states, including Fulton County, Georgia, where it was about a third, if not more, of jurisdictions received these bomb threats. And as you mentioned, they came from an email provider based in Russia, mail.ru. RU is the top-level domain for Russian internet sites. It's not clear, though, who's actually behind it. It might not be government-linked actors. Typically, the tradecraft of Russian hackers is to obfuscate, to hide where they're originating from. So saying, hey, we're from Russia, isn't typically the way they do it. So it could be a hacking group seeking notoriety. And I think that's what the ensuing days and weeks and investigation will unveil.
There's an important part of this story, though, that I want to underline and understand a little bit better, and that is that these multiple bomb threats seem to have caused no long-lasting disruption. Whatever brief evacuation or other action needed to be taken, people seem to be prepared. They seem to have backup plans. They seem to move on rather quickly.
I think that's right. And look, we've said this for years and years and years, that election officials are natural emergency managers. They know how to deal with things that pop up and create adversity. And bomb threats are something that I think we've had to deal with in elections for the last several cycles. So it's not just a 2024 thing. So they had playbooks. They knew how to assess the incoming threats. They knew how to evacuate. They knew how to start back up, and they knew how to work with lawyers from the opposing parties and then go to the courts and extend hours for voting to overcome any disruption. So, you know, this went pretty smoothly from a response side. It is unfortunate, of course, that anybody was inconvenienced, but it looks like once again the system held.
Chris Krebs, former director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, which feels like it's repetitive there, Chris, but that is the name, CISA. I got it right, didn't I?
We like security so much it's in our name twice. Excellent. At least that's what I was saying back in the day.
Right, thanks. It's a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much.
And our colleague Miles Parks has been covering voting for years, and he is here in Studio 31. And Miles, as I saw the reaction to these bomb threats, I thought of something that you told us in recent days on the air, which was that election officials felt kind of ready for whatever might come their way on this Tuesday, and that turned out to be correct.
Yeah, absolutely. As Krebs mentioned there, I had heard for weeks and months leading up to this election that bomb threats and swatting, which is kind of similar to a bomb threat in terms of making a call to a threatening call that could potentially disrupt things. This was all part of how election officials were planning for this election, thinking about their precincts. And I think going forward, as we continue to see votes being counted, they're also thinking about preparing for these sort of things at vote counting centers. So I think generally their response yesterday in terms of both in terms of being able to make it so there weren't too many delays, but also in communicating really clearly about what they were seeing showed that there was kind of preparation.
I want to ask about something, and it may be hard to determine the long-term effect of this, but... But we had the Trump campaign put tremendous emphasis on what they called election integrity, and thousands of people seem to have gone out and observed polling places and so forth. We know it was all based on a lie, the claim that the 2020 election was stolen, but people went out and watched for themselves and saw this election unfold, and it unfolded smoothly and legally and according to procedure. And this makes me wonder if that part of the story could turn out to be positive for people's faith in elections. People went out and watched and saw really nothing as a boring day.
I think that's a really optimistic perspective on it because, I mean, that is what election officials say is like, we want people to come watch. Like, once the people come see, if you work as a poll worker, that is actually how you kind of truly fight against these election lies. I will say, though, that so much of this stuff seems very, very ingrained. And we haven't seen in the last few hours the same sort of election lies we saw in 2020. But I will say Donald Trump won in 2016, and he still managed to spread lies about results in some states after that election. So we will just see what the coming days.
Oh, he claimed that his loss in the popular vote was illegitimate.
Exactly.
We still don't know, by the way, how the popular vote is going to turn out in this election. Trump has won the electoral vote. That is the legal reality. The political reality, we don't know. Trump may yet win the popular vote, but that's not known for sure.
Yeah, a lot to watch.
Miles, thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve.
That's NPR's Miles Parks. This is NPR News.
It's 7:19, and you are tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. It's a mix of national public radio and local conversations, including local elections. I'm Heidi Holton.
And I'm Andrew DeZingle.
Coming up next, we'll be talking with Chelsea Perkins about the news team's efforts and where you can find information, and we'll learn about some of the big races. We've got a lot of conversations for you going on throughout our morning, so stay tuned. Areas of fog this morning with partly sunny skies, highs 46 to 49, west winds around 5, cloudy tonight with lows 28 to 32. Partly sunny, highs in the mid to upper 40s for tomorrow, and sunny by Friday, 52 to 55.
We receive support from the Bonner Eye Clinic with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, general eye exams, and more. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly. And we receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984. Performing auto body and collision repair, as well as auto glass replacement. Dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information online at dalesautobodyinc.com.
Got some texts coming in this morning. You can text 218-326-1234. Mary from Cass Lake, good morning to you as well. Chelsea Perkins is here now. I'm kind of cradling my cup of coffee, as John Barrow always accuses me of that. I'm like, I don't cradle it, and here I am. So Something about it kind of is comforting. And after a long, long night, which you had longer than me and Andrew, we are here the day after elections. And let's talk a little bit about what the news team, how you prepared to cover these elections.
Well, we started off right away at 7 a.m., actually earlier, for our volunteer photographer, Lori Schall, who went around to polling places right out the gate, wanted to get some photographs of people waiting in line, and just really start off strong with a sense of the excitement of the day and what it means to be able to cast a vote on Election Day. And we prepared ourselves by making sure that we were aware of all of the results that we were going to be following. You know, we had so many contested races across our region, from Congress level all the way down to township board, and we wanted to cover them all. And that we did. And I haven't slept. So here I am.
There we go. So let's talk about some of the local races that kind of stand out to you.
Yeah. So, well, first off, you know, one of the things that is always interesting to me in watching local races is how much one vote can make a difference. In looking at several of the local races around the region, we had multiple ties, which it's always interesting when that happens because, you know, barring a recount that would change the results, those often end up in literal tiebreakers that can involve drawing from a deck of cards, flipping a coin. You know, it all comes down to that. And that's how important.
That's how the ties are broken?
It is. I've covered those in the past. There's been moments where, like, Breezy City Council members, I recall in Breezy Point specifically, that it was a literal coin flip that determined the winner because it was an exact tie. And we have a few of those examples across the region. In the city of Bacchus, there was a tie for second for the two seats open on the city council. And so Carl Fleer and Nancy Tolley tied at 6 votes apiece. Bacchus is a pretty small town, so there's not many voters there. But we also in Kettle River, same thing. There was 2 seats open on the city council. The second place vote getters each got 33, with the winner getting 61 votes. So we'll have to see.
We're not talking percentages. We're talking 33 votes.
33 votes. Okay. That's right. But in Renshaw, there was a tie for mayor, and that was 143 votes each. So the incumbent mayor and the challenger each got the same exact vote. And in Federal Dam, we also had a tie for a special election for the city council, where 2 city council members would be voted in. And again, the second place both got 27 votes total, and the first place got 28. So again, you can see how your vote does make a difference, especially at the local level.
Will you be following up? Do you know how they will decide those?
I do plan on following up because, okay, you know, I'm sure there will be a recount most likely in those races just to assure that everything came out correctly last night. There's also the possibility that there could be some corrections on the Secretary of State's website. These are unofficial results. And occasionally there's, you know, errors that happen when those numbers are first input. And then later you look and you notice changes. But yes, I'm very curious to see how these ties will be broken.
So one thing I have a question about when it comes to election coverage, where, like, not all the results aren't coming in all at once. So how do you approach that in reporting of, like, these aren't the final results? So, like, what am I trying to say here? Of just that, like,
right, just assuring that people know, like, at what point in the process things are along that race. I mean, so what we did is we set up documents on our website that we intended to update on a regular basis. We had an updated at this time on this date at the very top of the document, so people would know how recent this information was, and we had it broken up by the state and federal races, the county races, school board, city, and township. And we purposefully did that in separate locations because we wanted people to be able to more easily find the information that they were looking for specifically. And What you do is you just spend a lot of time on the Secretary of State's website going through and looking for the cities that we were particularly interested in. Again, all the contested races across our region is what we were focused on. And in a lot of those places, there's only one precinct. So once the results come in, that's the results. But in some places like Brainerd, for instance, I believe there is 9 precincts that we would need to wait for to get the final results. So we noted that on our document saying, oh, 3 out of 9 precincts have reported. This is the percentage of the votes that has come in thus far. So we want to make sure that people are aware of like whether or not this is final information. And again, all of the results that we're seeing right now are still unofficial until they are canvassed and officially certified.
And I think that can be like, especially in this day and age where we're so used to like getting that information that we're looking for like immediately kind of thing. But that's not how the election process works. And like imagining like maybe even 20 years ago, we wouldn't have all this information right at our fingertips quickly.
Right. And one thing to consider is that this is literal human beings who are transporting physical ballots to a centralized location. So you take a place like Beltrami County, Cass County, those are giant places, relatively speaking, as far as like the amount of travel time that it takes to get to that centralized place. You know, you're traveling through desolate areas in the dark of night in order to transport these ballots from far flung locations. And that takes time. And so we just keep watching, keep an eye on it. You know, results weren't really starting to flow until I would say between 11 and midnight, really, where we were starting to see things pick up the pace and start to see some more definitive results.
We're talking about local elections today. Our news team has been updating at KAXE.org throughout the night. They were putting information there for us. I wanted to ask you, you talked about some of the, we did have a kind of interesting judicial race that you guys were following too.
Yes, we did. So the 6th Judicial District, that basically covers the Arrowhead region of the state, a seat that would be benched in Duluth involved a contested race that didn't have an incumbent. That is a pretty rare situation for a judicial race. Often, you know, I'm sure you've all had the experience where you look on the backside of your ballot and there's all of these judges on there. Most of the time, they don't have anyone running against them. And a lot of the time, you know, they do, but it almost always is an incumbent, someone who is seated there. In this case, the judge that was seated in this particular courtroom, Judge Dale Harris, he kind of, it was a surprise announcement, a surprise retirement announcement that happened this summer. And it set up the race for 5 individuals to pursue. And the primary narrowed that field to 2. So last night, we got results in. Attorney Sean Reed is the winner based on these unofficial results. And Gunner B. Johnson was the other candidate that had made it through to the general election. You know, Reed is 53 years old. He's an attorney with Reed Law LTD and has been a trial attorney for 27 years. You know, we talked a little bit about this last week, Heidi, about on Dialed In, about judicial races and how they're different than most races. I mean, judges aren't able to talk about how they would rule on specific cases, for instance. They're not allowed to raise money for themselves. They are certainly not partisan. They're not associated with a party, Republican, Democrat, or otherwise. So it was an interesting one to see shape up for that reason, and just, you know, kind of getting an idea of like how people are making decisions about this type of race. Both of these candidates, I will say, did fill out our election guide. Okay. And so I'd like to think that, you know, people were able to get information from that. Sorry.
That's okay.
That's my alarm that was supposed to wake me up. But I have already been awake, so.
Okay. I was like, what is
I was
happening?
Like, oh my gosh, we're getting breaking news right now.
We're going to be talking about election coverage. You know, it is interesting with the judges race because, you know, typically it happens, they're appointed, they go through a rigorous process to get appointed to the judge, you know? And so this is different now. now they are automatically on the track where they have to get reelected.
Yes, that's right. And it is the most common scenario that a judge is first appointed by a commission of judicial selection. Ultimately, it is the governor that makes that appointment, but this commission helps that decision happen. And this case, you know, it was straight to the voters. And in a lot of ways, you know, judges play an extremely important role in our government. You may find yourself in front of a judge for one reason or another, and it's good to, I personally think that it's important for people to be paying attention to who is seated and the kind of decisions that they are making about your friends and neighbors and the justice system. And this gives voters a direct line to that.
Coming up, we'll be talking about more of the local races. I'm seeing from MinnPost, we'll be talking to Minnesota Reformer later about kind of statewide stuff. But MinnPost is reporting right now that the DFL has held its single-seat majority in the state Senate by winning a special election in the West Metro suburbs. But the House is currently tied still. So we do not know the outcome there. So hopefully we'll keep a watch on that and keep you updated on that for the Minnesota House.
Yes, and in fact, I can report that one of the seats in our district or in our region did flip. The seat that was held by Representative Dave Lisicard, one of the last DFLers on the range, that Cal Warwis did win that, and he is a Republican. So that contributed to this slim margin that exists now in the Minnesota House and whether or not that will be maintained in DFL control.
It's Chelsea Perkins. She'll stick around. We've got more to bring you, but coming up next, we'll bring you best wishes.
Thank you.
Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, 100 Days, 100 Nights is the name of the song. We are here for you today. It is 7:36. We'll be bringing you best wishes coming up next and more election coverage throughout our morning. Staff will be with you until noon when you'll hear the World Cafe.
We receive support from the Northwest Minnesota Foundation, serving two tribal nations and 12 counties in Northwest Minnesota, supporting ideas and providing resources to lift up the people, businesses, and communities who call Northwest Minnesota home. More at nwmf.org. And we receive support from Paul Bunyan Communications, offering technology for your business like smart biz, managed voice and Wi-Fi services, security cameras, and more. Online at paulbunyan.net. Paul Bunyan Communications. It's right here.
It's time for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. We don't have to fight today, Andrew. There's just two.
Yep, there's just two.
You choose the one.
You go first.
All right. Kirsten Bogren, happy 58th birthday to you.
And Thomas Nett, happy 37th birthday to you. 1 year ahead of me.
Oh, there we go. We are going to take a listen now. I believe we're going to listen. It's our album of the week. Have you listened to this much?
Yeah, I have.
What do you think?
I enjoyed it. I really like that Warren Zevon cover because I don't know if you know this, but I'm in a Warren Zevon phase right now, which is very exciting. It was predetermined years ago.
Sure.
Every 30-something guy needs to go through a Warren Zevon phase at some point.
Really? I love anybody. Like Trampled by Turtles does a cover of Keep Me in Your Heart for a While as well. And then Willie Nelson's on this is just amazing. I call him Zevon, but I don't know.
Be saying it wrong.
Okay.
I am notorious for having never said words out loud that I read.
I do too. The other day I had to look up S-O-U-P-C-O-N. I was reading it in the novel and I was just like, what? I've seen it before, but I don't understand it. So I had to do one of those, how do you say this? And it's Sousson. Okay. So anyway, figured that one out. But what I was going to say about Warren Zevon, I remember when he was still alive, he was dying of cancer. He was on David Letterman. They have a whole tribute album to him based on this conversation they had, because Letterman looked at him and he said, you're at the end of your life, because they were having this very direct conversation. You maybe think of things differently than the rest of us now. And he's like, do you have any advice as you look back? And he just says, enjoy every sandwich.
Wow.
So the tribute album, I don't know if you've listened to that.
Mm-mm.
We got Adam Sandler doing Werewolf in London on that one.
Wow.
It's called Enjoy Every Sandwich. So I think after this, we should probably listen to the song we've been talking about, right?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Okay. But let's talk a little bit about the Willie Nelson album. It's his cover here.
Yeah, it's his 76th solo album from the country music legend. He's 91.
Solo.
Yeah. I think it's like 156 albums or something like that he's on, which is just wild to think about. And like you said, it's a covers album and the songs they chose are perfect for Nelson's voice today and for reflecting on his larger than life career. I mean, the guy wrote songs like in the 60s.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Patsy Cline.
Yeah, you're not just saying that.
No.
It's the actual name of the song.
Yeah. Here's a song it's a sad song, but some days you got to hear, you know, kind of a song like this, the melancholy sounds of kind of the older Willie Nelson here. From Last Leaf on the Tree, our album of the week by Willie Nelson.
Shadows are falling and I'm running out of breath. Keep me in your heart for a while. If I leave you, doesn't mean I love you any less. Keep me in your heart for a while. When you get up in the morning and you see that crazy sun, keep me in your heart for a while. Train leaving nightly cold, but all is said and done. Just keep me in your heart for a while. Sometimes you're doing simple things around the house. Maybe you'll think of me and smile. You know I'm tied to you just like the buttons on your blouse. Keep me your heart for a while. Thoughts, take me to your dreams, touch me as I fall in view. When the winter comes, keep the fires lit, I'll be right next to you. Engine driver headed north to Pleasant Street, keep me in your heart for a while. These wheels keep on turning, but they're running out of steam. Keep me in your heart for a while. Keep me in your heart for a while. Keep me in your heart for a while.
All right, and that was Willie Nelson with Keep Me In Your Heart. If you have a birthday or anniversary to share, text us at 218-326-1234. We'd love to hear from you. We receive support from the First State Bank of Big Fork and their Kellyer branch, banking that fits a customer's sense of adventure, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device, member FDIC. And we receive support from Fire in the Village, a collective of artists and cultural organizers using art, music, and fashion to build community, presenting a collection of live concert events featuring David Huckfelt and Annie Humphrey in Grand Rapids, Bemidji, Brainerd, and Aitken this November. Showtimes and locations are available at fireinthevillage.org.
7:44, and you are tuned in to the Wednesday morning show. This is the election edition. We're bringing you an extra hour of the morning show today, and then music by On the River by Jennifer Barr and Andrew DeZingle, kind of tag teaming it today, so that should be pretty fun. But first, before we get back to Chelsea Perkins, let's take a listen to our daily dose of phonology.
On today's date, November 6th, 1999, I'm saddened to discover that the eagle's nest has fallen to the ground. The white pine that supported it had been scarred by a porcupine's, and the top had died. And finally, the nest fell. It was built in 1985, and it lasted until this November 1999. I was dismayed, because I saw this as the end of a chance to have an eagle as a neighbor. But I was mistaken, because just 1 week later, on the 12th of November, I noticed that they are beginning anew to build a nest in an aspen, which is not far removed from the tree that they had the nest in previously. Having eagles for neighbors is a unique and exciting experience, because when they fledge, when the young fledge from the nest, oftentimes they end up in some unpredictable places, like on my deck rail or in my yard or on a branch in a tree right near my door. All exciting spots.
Your daily dose of phonology, you hear it here on KAXE with John Latimer, our staff phonologist. Want to remind you that our board of directors is beginning a fundraiser for us. Silent Auction begins on Friday and goes to Monday. It's always cool stuff in there. It's a great way, another way for you to support this local coverage, this great music that you hear, and things like Green Cheese Trivia. A lot of items in there that are kind of experiences. And I'm saying this, I thought of it now, because John Latimer is going to be offering a phenology walk.
Ooh.
There for, you can be anywhere from like 10 to 20 people, he said.
And don't make the same mistake I did last year, where I didn't keep checking the auction website, because I was in the running to get a Replacements record box set, and someone outbid me right at the very end.
You know, this is really, you know, Chelsea Perkins is in the studio with us. That's what you had to do last night. Keep checking the results. Don't assume your Replacements album is going to be there. Am I right?
Oh, very
I'm
much
saying
so.
That all the time.
Yes, that's our motto, right?
Right.
I mean, honestly, though, I can't commend my team enough for their hard work last night. We also had some assistance from Jennifer Barr and Steve. Our engineer was here as well, helping us keep track of everything. And of course, Lori Schall, our volunteer photographer, who is just absolutely wonderful, spent many hours with us yesterday helping us make this happen.
Well, and not just the work last night, but like throughout this election season with the election guide there, all the work that was put into there. And I know I used the election guide and checking it up all the time, like checking on my local races kind of thing. So it wasn't just last night. It was a marathon, not a sprint.
Yes, very much so. You know, among journalists, it's sort of considered the Super Bowl, right? Of your every couple of years, and especially in a presidential year, there's just a lot. It's more consequential, and it's just an important night. And we got pizza, and we had, you know, snacks, and to keep us fueled and going throughout the night.
Well, let's talk about, we're going to be covering different regions within our listening area throughout the programming today. Chelsea, let's talk a little bit about, you covered the Brainerd area. That's where you're from originally. What kind of things were you seeing there?
Well, I'll start off with look at a couple of legislative races. So House District 6B, now that is sort of western Crow Wing County. It includes much of Brainerd, all of Baxter, Nisswa, that area. It's been represented by Representative Josh Heintzman, a Republican, for several terms now. This year was a little bit different. It was a little bit of more an interesting race in the fact that there was three candidates on the ballot. Josh Heintzman, Emily LeClaire, who was the DFL candidate, and Troy Scheffler, who was running as an independent with the Americans First Party. Heintzman was victorious again. He earned 63.4% of the vote. Little over 15,700 people voted for him. Emily LeClaire coming in second with 33% of the vote, and Scheffler coming in at 3.41%. You know, that race has been pretty spicy, I guess you could say. There's been a lot of back and forth between particularly Scheffler and Heintzman, including legal action that's taken place. And if you saw the Lakeland debate, Lakeland Public Television debate, there was much focus on that rather than the issues, which I personally found a little bit frustrating. You know, as a voter, you want to hear about what they're going to do in office. And instead, there was a lot of discussion about and personal attacks that were being made there. So that was certainly a race we were watching. In House District 6A, we have Ben Davis, the incumbent, who does represent Grand Rapids here as well. It's a kind of a strangely shaped district that stretches all the way from Grand Rapids down to the eastern side of Crow Wing County, including the Crosby-Ironton area, Cross Lake. And he also won re-election, 66% of the vote over Earl Butenhoff, who was the DFL candidate there. Moving to a little bit smaller races, we had Crow Wing County. There was a contested race for the commissioner district. Now, I covered Crow Wing County Board for about 8 years at the Brainerd Dispatch, so it's something that I was paying special attention to. You know, interesting part of this district, this commissioner district here, it does represent the Cuyuna Lakes area, so Crosby-Ironton, over that, in that neck of the woods. And the incumbent, who had been in office for, I want to say 16 years, lost in the primary. So we had two first-time candidates for that seat that were battling it out. Jamie Lee came out on top with 52% of the vote over Jonna Johnson in that race. So we'll have to see how that changes the dynamic of the Crow Wing County Board. I'll be interested to keep a watch on it. And lastly, I wanted to point to Cross Lake. Cross Lake is my hometown. And those of you who may have listened to our recent Dialed In coverage, you would have heard a young candidate roundtable that I hosted. And one of those candidates was Jackson Purfirst. He's 24 years old. He's been serving on the Cross Lake City Council for 2 years, and he ran for mayor. And he defeated the incumbent mayor, David Nevin, by he actually earned 58, almost 59% of the vote in that race there. And then we also have two brand new council members who are coming in onto the Cross Lake City Council as well, Bob Heels and Jamie Knapp.
So as the current council member, I assume, when would be the special election for that spot?
Well, my understanding is that that seat will be appointed for the remainder of the term.
We're talking about Jackson.
Yes, because Jackson Purfirst will be, you know, vacating his council seat in order to ascend to the mayoral seat. And so that will leave an open seat on the council. And my understanding is that that will be an appointed position for the remainder of his term.
You know, that was talking to younger candidates was something you wanted to do. We were talking to some younger voters as well. People are probably, you know, it's the day after election, so they've may not want to hear lots of stuff. But if you want an uplifting conversation, it's really an interesting thing and a hopeful thing. People from different parties, younger people who feel committed to serve their communities.
Yeah, you know, it was something I wanted to do because it's a rarity, really, to see candidates under 35 who are pursuing elected office. And there wasn't many. I mean, of our election guide entries, I want to say there were fewer than 10, if not even less than that, that were, you know, that age or younger. And you couldn't, we got such a great comment after airing that the other day, Heidi, from Sandy Lehman, former legislator, who made a point that she couldn't tell at all what the party affiliation was of any of those people involved in that conversation. It was just they were really almost bonding, I would say, over their love of community, their love of service, how important it is for them to show that and reflect that in how they serve and pursue office and even, you know, participate in things like library boards or other community, you know, nonprofit boards and reaching out to people that they wouldn't normally have conversations with and to learn about issues that don't necessarily affect them directly, but that they know affect their neighbors. And it really did leave me with the warm fuzzies. And I also sort of felt like I related a lot to them because a lot of the things that they talk about is why I do the work that I do as a local journalist.
Mm-hmm. I would say the same for all of the folks who work here. We care about what we do. We're committed to the local community and to bringing you what you need every day and what kind of keeps you company throughout your day. And we sure appreciate you listening in today. It is the day after the election. That's a lot of information that gets dropped in your lap, but you're not going to get this kind of information about the local races anywhere but here. So stay tuned to KEXE. We'll be bringing you a lot more. At 8:10, we've got Aaron Brown joining us. He'll talk about the Iron Range and kind of what he was watching election night. Maybe he was up all night too, who knows? But we'll be talking with him about that. And then Larissa will be in as well.
That's right. Larissa Donovan, our reporter out of Bemidji, will be filling us in on what occurred on the Bemidji city races, as well as Bemidji School Board and Beltrami County Board over there in that region. We also had some interesting things that came up, like in the city of Black Duck, for instance. They actually had five separate referendum questions that they asked their voters to consider for taxes to make improvements to city property. And that was, you know, a little bit surprising. You don't normally see five separate questions like that.
Did you say they passed?
One out of the five passed, and it was for improvements to the public library.
Very interesting. You guys have given us information about some of the other local referendums. Is that the right way to say that? Oh, Sydney.
Yeah. Yeah. There was several school district questions as well that were asked, but many at the city level and even township level. One thing I noticed at the township level is that a lot of these townships are considering whether or not to keep their clerk and treasurer positions like elected. And, you know, we've heard just anecdotally that it can be really difficult to recruit candidates or find people that want to run for those positions. And I know, covering county government, that's the thing as well, where they've sort of eliminated some of those positions like county auditor, things like that, that are used to be elected are now appointed instead.
So I have a question about the when cities have like a question like those where it's yes or no, if you want to approve it kind of thing. I noticed on my ballot, with the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund renewal, if you didn't vote at all, it was considered a no vote. Is that the same case for these type of city questions?
You know, I don't believe so. I think because that was a constitutional amendment, that has a little bit of a different flavor. So at the local level, you know, that is more just like asking people, are you willing to pony up some tax dollars, right? To cover, you know, whether it's at the school level, it could be just simply increased revenue. It could be to improve, you know, facilities in the school district. But with that particular case, because it was about amending the state constitution in order to extend this, what it is the proceeds from the Minnesota State Lottery that go into a trust fund to support environmental and natural resources efforts in the state. The constitutional element of it is what makes it different. So yes, if you didn't vote on that question, it was counted as a no vote. That was successful. I believe it was 77%.
77.48.
Yes. So 77% of voters did approve extending that. That's one of the longest standing constitutional, I guess, funds that the state has. It's been in place since the 80s. And so it certainly was interesting to see how that was going to turn out. We did, you know, see some pushback, particularly from area Republicans who felt that some of the changes that were made this time around, they didn't think were right concerning how the funding was going to be allocated, things like that. But as you can see, Minnesotans did support it.
We just heard from Susie. She's a teacher in the Deer River area, and she's driving to school this morning, and she gave a big thanks to you and me, Andrew, for keeping her company on this election, day after election. Okay, we'll be bringing you lots more coming up. We'll have news headlines from National Public Radio. Aaron Brown's going to be joining us, and we'll continue to talk about we'll get to the House races, as well as lots more city, municipal, township, school boards. There's so much to be talking about.